All right.
Hey, everybody. Hey everybody, how you doing? This is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show.
My ear.
And evidently we actually have a working stream now, so y'all should be able to hear us, which is pretty cool. Anyway, does anybody know, by the way, the date for this show, folks, is 11-10-2004. This is our coming right up on our second annual Thanksgiving-type holiday while we've been doing the show, which is pretty cool. And hopefully we're going to have a show for you there right before Thanksgiving.
Should we introduce anybody?
Not yet. I'm waiting until after the promo, man, after the bit. Because this is like show. Does anybody know what show it is?
58.
Yes, indeed. All right, boys and girls, we'll be right back at you in just a second. Until then, listen to this.
Hey, guys. This is Kevin of KevinDevin.com, host of In the Trenches. Hey, just thought I'd throw you back some audio feedback here. Just want to let you know I enjoy your show and intend to keep listening. I just got turned onto it here a couple weeks ago, so now that it's all in podcast form, it makes it even easier. So anyway, I want to say keep it up, and also I decided to put in a little voiceover, send it for a little trailer for you. So if you use it, fine. If don't, no biggie. Just thought I'd do it in a little fun. So if you've ever listened to my podcast, you'll know that I like to poke fun at things. So enjoy, and I'll talk to you again soon. See ya.
Hey, this is Kevin, host of In the Trenches, the podcast for sysadmins, and you're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show. Long live OS X.
Have you listened to that yet?
Yes, I have.
I haven't.
I know, because, you know, the smart people send their stuff to me because I know that makes it get on the air.
No, I mean In the Trenches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a great show.
No.
It's a great... He does a lot of Microsoft-y kind of things, though. No, I won't hold that against him.
I thought he did OS X, but it's OS X forever.
No, no, no. He said OS X on. I'm guessing that he uses OS X at home, but for the most part, his show deals with... Well, it has, over the past few episodes, dealt with a lot of Microsoft-ish kind of problems, which, you know, is, of course...
There's nothing but
Microsoft generates, right, and it's problems. But, no, it is a good tech show, podcast. Please go and check it out. You can go to... Yeah, it never fails, man. You can go to, find him over there at http://kevindevin.com, KevinDevin.com. And, of course, you can grab his feed for his podcast over there, too. You can just append a /wp-rss2.php on the end of that. And that's the RSS for his podcast. Check it right out. I listen to it.
I'm still back in October.
Dan's backlog. Dan's backlog past the first week of podcasting.
Oh, my God.
It's our call-in guest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pick up the phone. It's our call-in.
Speaking of guests tonight, not only do we have me, I'm Link, and we also have Dan, of course, the smelly one, and Alan. We also have a guest here tonight, Pat.
What's happening?
How you doing,
it's
Pat?
Back again.
Excellent.
This is Pat's second tech show. So he's becoming like a regular, you know? Like it took almost this many weeks to get Alan to talk.
Well, no, that was months.
Yeah, months.
I had to go out and buy a microphone for
about a month, actually.
You know, you can find out by looking back on the forum at all the shows that Pat archived for us.
Right.
A fantastic job.
Right, he's done a really good job of that, too. Yeah. And by the way, I finally got a... did you get your email today from Brock?
Brock Sampson from Venture Brothers?
No.
I got the reply from you.
Our buddy Brock from Australia said he wanted to help do some of the show.
Why doesn't Pat have headphones?
Because
I left them at work.
He's no headphones. That's why
we got the broken pair over here that he can listen to and blow his eardrums out.
Okay, I don't need them.
Did you have like all the episodes tagged and archived and all that? Is that all done already, Pat? Hello, Pat.
Everything's been done for a week.
Okay. Even like the current ones.
Yeah. Huh. I'm up to date.
Okay then.
Went back and just a comment on the old episodes. I went back and I listened to some of the old episodes and. The quality has improved.
And he's a better man for it than we are for that.
You listen to, especially like the first two episodes where like the microphones we were using were like humming and whistling. And
oh, no, dude, they're the same microphones, man.
We haven't upgraded
microphones at all.
We did have the one karaoke the one time.
Yeah, but
the first show was the karaoke.
That has nothing, I don't think that has anything to do with it, man, because we're using the same, like we got two of these $15 cheapo Radio Shack microphones the first night. We've been using them ever since, man.
Two of my favorite episodes were Dan's solo Conan episode.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's legendary.
And the disaster remote location from Lynx.
Oh, man.
That was pretty bad.
That was a rough one. That, of course, was all Dan's fault, you know.
Yeah.
Like usual.
That wasn't even there for half of it, and it's still my fault.
But well, listen,
that's the reason it was your fault.
I want to give it a shout out to one of our friends who actually uses the forum. You guys probably didn't read that either, did you? Adrian Bradshaw.
I read the forums once a week.
Adrian Bradshaw writes on our tech show forum. Really love the new intro, outro music, guys. However, the little girl's voice, your daughter's, actually it's Dan's daughter, is a little louder than the rest. I think if I could change anything, I'd lower the level on that channel just a bit. Love the show. Don't know how you guys keep it up every week. Neither do we. But
35 seconds worth of preparation.
That's right. We did just walk in and on the fly kind of thing. But no, I did, since I read that actually yesterday, I stopped what I was doing today for 10 minutes and went through and normalized the music. So it should be a little bit better than it was previously.
It does sound much better.
Used Resound, of course, the outstanding open source audio tool. Let us know how it is now.
Although Dan's daughters did get attention when I was playing the promo at work one time.
Oh, yeah?
It was all of a sudden you hear, you know, I got the radio low because I'm in a cube, farm. On it, but that's all you heard, and everybody's like, "What's all that noise over there?" It's like, "Oh, it's nothing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Just ignore it. Never mind this gun in your face. Just ignore it.
Never mind that." Yeah.
Alan said, "Never mind my butt in your face. Just ignore it.
No, don't look.
I'm naked.
Hey,
that's frightening.
Ignore the smell coming out of my cubicle.
You know what else I noticed? You guys.
Oh, wait. Listen.
No, she's
the dog was
now.
Barking.
Is that what you do? Put the
that
dog
like
outside.
A slug radio episode. Phones ringing, the dog's barking,
the
people are knocking.
In the
we got to have another. We have to have another hello go out to Dave Slusher of Evil Genius Chronicles, which you know we all listen to religiously because it's a really good show. He mentioned us. Did you guys even see this? He mentioned us earlier in the week on Friday.
Yeah.
He said he was on his plane ride, I guess, to...
we were the ones, one of the ones he was listening
yeah,
to.
Yeah, he was on the plane ride, and he was listening to our show, and he says the next one up in his playlist was the Linux Link Tech Show, which really is more like what I'm in the mood for now. Having listened to 30 minutes to them, this is exactly what I wanted to hear. I love these knuckleheads. It's kind of like having your friends sit around goofing on each other. Of course, it's downright...
And we
downright,
do that well.
Yes, we do. Of course, it's downright comical how little they talk about Linux, but I don't care. I've been meaning to email Link Fesnan and rag on him about how much more sensible he is when he's on Matthew Bischoff's cast, which is Escape from the World. And I don't know if I'm more sensible.
Well, you were talking a lot more about operating systems and stuff.
You're more knowledgeable.
talking on a Matthew show.
Yeah, well, it wasn't ass.
Wasn't my show. I don't want to make myself a giant ass on his show, well, and then he's not going to play me anymore.
It was more along the lines of he was interviewing you, though. So it was,
yeah, well, you know, plus you got to kind of I sort of moderate myself a little bit when I'm talking to him because he's 13.
Yeah, come on, Alan.
I mean, he's 13 you know, years old.
He does an awesome job.
He's a great, he's a smart kid, and I like talking to him. He's really intelligent, and you can talk, you know. Mano a mano to him, but still, I sort of want to moderate myself a little bit.
That'd be nice.
I don't want to spend the entire time talking to him on his podcast going, you know what, Windows sucks.
That's how you,
well, because
that's
it
what
does,
you're thinking.
Yeah. Well, we know it does, but, you know, I...
You're being nice.
We do have to get together and put some Nopics.
Meter myself a little
bit. Keep sending him Nopics.
No, we're just going to show up at his door at his doorstep one day and you know, introduce
put
ourselves.
Put Slack on his machines.
Introduce ourselves to his mom, and we'll have Linux running on all his computers before he gets home. I know he has Fedora Core 1, I think, because he hasn't upgraded that either on his stuff. But we got to get him going, and we got to get Dave Slusher on our show too. We'll have to get him. See if I'm sure he has Skype, right? Dave Slusher, you gotta have Skype, right? Why don't you, you know, give us a call sometime? Send me an email, something. Anyway, we could have some fun. All right, but anyway, yeah. Listen to Dave Slusher's Evil Genius Chronicles. We all listen to that. It's a really good show. And right now, I think he's on vacation in Disneyland.
Is he? I didn't hear that yet.
Is it?
I haven't listened to the latest show yet.
Or the land.
I'm, you know, it could be one of them things where, like, I'm in La La Land myself today. Maybe. Anyway, check that out. And, you know, we have a lot of other stuff to mention. Firefox 1.0 is out.
Yes, and everyone should be running
it. Yes, everybody right now, jump on it. Well, not right now. Listen to us first, and then go jump and get Firefox 1.0 because it's really cool. And I personally think it's faster even yet than the RC1 that I was running like 2 days ago. So,
For those of us who are forced to run Windows at work, it makes the day go much quicker.
It would have to. You know, anytime you access the internet, you don't have to worry about your computer exploding or whatever, and less viruses and all of that happy business. And, of course, we all have Firefox 1.0, with the exception of maybe Dan. Dan.
On what?
Dan.
He's compiling it right
Firefox
now as we
1.0.
speak.
Firefox 1.0. compiling it. Do you have it on Crux yet?
No.
Is that what you're using over there? Oh, dude. You're not, like, compiling it or something?
No.
Come on, man.
I didn't want to hog up the bandwidth, unlike you pricks who come over here and decide to update your patch your systems on my network.
That's
because your network works, not like my
just
my
I'm upgrading the system right now.
That's just exactly what I wanted to do, come over to the Dan's house to compile shit, right?
Why not? Alan does.
I swore every week over here.
Upgrade it all.
Why not?
Ubuntu. Any of you guys using Ubuntu?
No.
Well, I'm trying to, but I can't get the disk.
you still can't get it? I went this week and downloaded the Ubuntu Live.
Oh, wait. Let me see if it actually...
I downloaded that like 2 weeks ago, and I tried it. I haven't really played around with
Dude,
it.
Dude, there's something wrong with this disk. This is the third CD-ROM
it works
drive I've
for
tried
me,
it
man.
On. And I can't DD it.
If you put it in, it works though.
This is the third one.
Did you do your MD5 sum?
Huh?
No, it's the disk works. Like I downloaded it.
I'm not saying the
disk
doesn't work, but I can't get it. I can't get the image off of this disk.
I don't know what to
tell you. Yeah, I don't know what
to tell
me.
One of those special black ones.
I can't even
record once, never read again.
It's an RIAA compliant.
Yes,
right.
Record once, never buy, never read again.
But now check out the Ubuntu. I'm going to put the link up in the.
So how is Ubuntu?
I think it's pretty damn cool.
It's a terrible name, though, I must say.
It's unique. It's unique. Yeah, it's supposed to mean something. Meaning humanity to others. That's what it means. And this is my all-time best review that you're ever going to probably hear for a Debian-based distribution. This is probably the best Debian-based distribution there is.
I have a question.
Period. What?
Can you get all the packages that are available for Debian?
I don't know. Because all I've really used is the live CD. You know what I mean?
Because Debian has thousands of packages available.
What are you doing?
My glasses were bumping against
man?
the the condom on the microphone here. The cloud noise.
Whacking
off over
there.
It just happened by accident.
What are you doing?
Alan started laughing.
He's making excuses.
I had to do it again.
Like, what are you running it on?
See, that's a classic example. If Alan would have just ignored it,
I
would have stopped.
I ran it on my laptop.
I thought I heard it before. That's why I was like, what the hell?
Ran it on
noise?
My laptop, which is a 400 megahertz Dell. And I also ran it on my 950 megahertz AMD Duron at home. And tried it. And it works really, really well. This is the CD, the live CD, by the way, which is what I downloaded. And I was really impressed with it. I did have one problem. And that problem is there isn't MP3 support on it.
Yes, that's Debian's way.
And see, now that's what I thought, too. And I had a comment earlier from somebody who said that the reason they did it was some kind of, legal reason or something like that. But I figured, this is another... Debian software Nazism issue.
Fedora does the same exact thing, by the way.
Well, yeah, they've been doing that since like Red Hat 7.
Very annoying. Yeah, but I can understand, right? I can understand the point of going out of your way to support open source standards, okay? Open source software, open source, whatever. I don't have a problem with that at all. But, like, is this going to make me re-encode my entire music collection into OGG or FLAC or something?
Probably not.
Not on your life, man.
FLAC is
no
nice.
No way am I going to do that. So why not make an easy avenue? I don't even care if they, like, don't give you MP3 support on the thing, just, out of whatever. But they should at least have some kind of easy avenue where you could get it.
Yeah.
You got to Google for a search for it.
That's one of my only, points on that I didn't like. And it's a really sparse, like, distribution. The live CD uses GNOME for your window management, and it uses, this couple standard programs. It doesn't give you a lot of choices like most other distributions do, but that's fine. You know what I mean? If you're gonna for a newbie to use it's got like everything they would need on there other than MP3 support.
So it's a nice desktop.
And probably the Windows video codecs and stuff like that. It's very, very functional. It's very quick. For a GNOME desktop, it's very quick. So I really liked it. I dug it. I sat there playing with it for a couple hours one night, and I posted on my weblog and all kinds of stuff through it. And
one of these days, I'll write back to my weblog again.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. And I fully intend on downloading the regular install version and installing it on the machine so I can just piss with it for a while and see what actually I can and cannot get working on there. I suspect that everything will work really, really well, though. I was quite impressed with it.
You know what?
No.
This is heresy. I understand this, but... ever since I set up that laptop downstairs
right.
for my wife, running
right.
Slack
right.
10... Mm-hmm. And I set her up with KD on a 1.7 gigahertz processor
uh-huh.
with, I think, either 120 or 256 megs of RAM. So KD runs fine, and it's not that bad. It kicks the heck out of GNOME, I think.
I like KD.
Really?
On the Slackware on there. Now, what I like to do every so often with KD is go through the menus to see all the neat stuff they have in there. Because sometimes, when you're not using KDE, you don't realize all that crap they throw in there. Like K-Stars and stuff, yeah, you know about. But sometimes, you wouldn't know about the potato guy unless you were looking through the KDE menu.
The potato guy.
The potato guy's
neat.
The KDE geometry. And I still don't understand what all that stuff is under the K-Office, like Cougar and some of that other stuff that they have there.
Right, right.
What it actually does. I think Kivio, is that what it's called?
The tea cooker works very well, too.
The tea thing was cool,
Kivio
but
was
you
like
know what,
Visio
real,
knockoff.
That's some real fluff right there, a tea timer, right?
Yeah.
Not
like
that
KDE
I haven't tried
station.
It, but
that's
still.
That's a good application.
What is?
KDE radio station.
I never listened to
it. It's for, internet radio-based stuff. It's really good. I like it.
It just picks up streams or what?
Streams. You can save your lists and stations. Oh. And it, you can record.
That's pretty cool. It's
kind of
like a stream tuner, right?
Yeah. You ever use
stream tuner? Japanese study. Study tool.
So I haven't made a habit of using KDE. It interests me to just play around with it.
Right.
What was I playing last night? Oh, the K Mini Golf.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It wasn't too bad.
You can create your own courses there
and stuff
if you want to. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I'll switch to KDE as my default window manager, but on a fast system with some heavy, with some power behind it, it's pretty cool. Now, what I'd be interested in trying is the K Remote Desktop. Whatever the heck that's called, to see
it's
how well
VNC,
that...
It's VNC, man.
No, it's not VNC.
Yes, it is.
It's not just
VNC. I tried it before.
Speaking of VNC, have you tried the new version of VNC?
4?
Yes.
Yes.
Have you noticed they removed the VNCX server in 4?
No.
And if you want to get the VNCX server, you have to recompile X yourself. It's a big pain in the butt.
I don't know. I'll have to look at that.
Because they removed those hooks. So I keep the old version around so I can still, you know, if I want to do something. So it makes it a lot more difficult to do the SWF to flash. Wait, VNC record.
Right.
And VNC to SWF to be able to do, like, the screen capture.
But if they remove the VNCX server, then how do you VNC into a Linux box?
It's you got to recompile X. You got to, like... Get the X sources and put in the VNC hooks or whatever and recompile it.
Well, that's sort of silly.
Don't have VNC server with it. Are you kidding me?
I'm not. Go to the VNC site. It's true. I pulled down 4 and the documentation on there specifically says on Unix systems
really
we don't
sucks.
Include the X VNC server anymore because you have to recompile it yourself using. And it's they say it's not for the unexperienced.
That
rocks. It does. It bummed me out because I was like, cool, there's a new VNC. It's like really
nice.
No,
I've been using like VNC for... In all honesty, I haven't set my Linux box up because I just, you know, I shell it in my box. I don't need to have
one. Right.
But I use it to get to Windows computers at work to like fix them remotely and stuff. And I know that in that instance... The new VNC 4, like, totally rocks.
It does.
You know, it's so much better than the old one. Completely rocks. It's much faster and a much nicer interface with the menus and the whole. But I never really tried to get a server running on my Linux. I'm going to have to do that now. Dang. Anyway.
Bum, bum, bum.
Hey, does everybody want... Brock sent us some stuff again. You want to listen to what Brock has to say?
Brock Sampson.
No.
Damn.
Chess Rockwell.
Chess
Freak. All right. Anyway, Brock from Perth, Australia, sent us an audio email, audio feedback thing again, and I'm going to play it. Till there.
Hi, how you going? It's Brock here, and I'd just like to reply to a comment which was sent in by a Texture listener a few episodes back. Link had received an email and he read it out on the tech show. This person had basically said that they didn't like the way the tech show was going and they wanted Link, Dan and Alan to all start talking about Linux a lot more.
Okay, wait right there. Let me qualify that a little bit. I probably have to turn the volume. I need to turn the volume up on the one.
Yeah, anyway, turn the volume up on
I'll turn it up
a little
bit.
Yeah.
Let me qualify that, though. What he's talking about is on our 1020 episode, 1020 2004, I read, I found, digging around, let me back up to my 1020 2004 crap. I was looking around on blogdigger.com. I found this guy, phpmp.com. Who had an entry that he posted in his weblog, and he bitches that we don't have enough Linux content and stuff, and he said that the only podcast that he doesn't like so far is ours, and I called him a whiny pud. And that's what he's talking about. This is what Brock's talking about. Now I go back to Brock and let him finish this thought.
I think his words were, the idea of a purely Linux space show appeals to me because I want to learn about Linux. Now... This person is entirely, they're entitled to have their opinion, but I've got to say, for his purpose, his point was that he wanted them to talk about Linux so he could learn more about it. for the people out there that are new to Linux, listening to a tech show will teach you some things, but it's not going to give you the knowledge that you need so you can configure a system and hack or do any of the advanced things on Linux. It will give you a few hints, but it's not going to be by any means comprehensive. For the newbies, if you want to learn about Linux, my advice would be get on a mailing list. For those who don't know, a mailing list is an email list which you subscribe to it. So you can normally find these on find a Linux user group on the internet. On these lists you can subscribe and send in questions which will then be sent out to everybody else on the mailing list. These people can read your comments and then send back feedback to you. This is probably the quickest way to learn, but I would advise there are a few rules, if you will, to take into consideration, more of the socio-economics of the internet. So if you're new, remember these rules. Number one would be to, when you're sending in a question, always type the question clearly and with proper grammar and spelling, because if you don't put much effort into what you're writing in, then the Linux geeks aren't going to want to reply. They're not going to want to put any effort in either. Number two, give as much information that you think is relevant. Well, I've seen emails where people send in, spyware has taken over my computer and I can't open a web page, help me. What you need to say is, I am running Linux Mandrake 10.0 official, and the browser I'm using is Firefox, and the problem I'm having, well actually no, you wouldn't say Firefox, because you'd be saying, oh, I've got Windows XP with Internet Explorer. Then you have a problem with that, but no. So, yeah. Send in your question like that, a bit more comprehensive, a bit more in-depth, so that they don't have to write more emails. Just make it the job a bit easier. The third thing, use plain text. Don't send in HTML emails with a pretty screen capture of what your screen looks like and the error message in a screen capture, because most of these people archive the mailing lists so that they can scroll through them a year later, 2 years later, and look and see what's in there. And that's why, so they want to keep the size of the database small, so, and probably you'll just get rejected anyway. Number four, respect the list's users. So the people on the mailing list, you need to respect these people, because arrogance and rudeness is going to get you nowhere fast, and you'll either be blacklisted, or the people are just going to flame you with comments and no one's going to help you, so it's really going to defeat the purpose of you being on the list. And believe you me, these people don't forget. Number five, show some initiative. People on the list aren't always going to spoon feed you with the answer for every question. They'll normally only help you with the harder things on the system. So, for example, if you send in an email and you say you want to learn how to use Vi, you aren't going to get an email back saying, well, here's Vi, and here's a big list of commands, and a nice pretty way.
Read the freaking manual!
They're not going to send you a pretty email with everything mapped out for you. They're going to send you an email that says, search on Google.
Read the freaking manual.
On the other hand, if you send in an email saying, I've got trouble with a script that I've written or that somebody's provided me with, and then you provide the code of the script in the email, then people are going to help you. So, use your initiative. If it's something that you think you can find on Google, at least have a look first, and don't bog these users down. Okay, so that's my little rules for the emailing list. The next topic, just a little software review. Bash Potter.
Yeah!
It's really cool. It's little shell script which was written by Link at the Linux Link Tech Show. And I use it on Mac OS X. It's a really cool program. It's basically a little script that runs in a cron job, and it will download your podcast feeds for you. And I use it because it's just one less program. I don't have to have an extra program running.
And because it's so damn cool.
There's a little bit of overhead on my system, and basically keeps my system a little bit quicker. So... it's not hard to set up either, so And also for the Linux newbies, it would actually be a good idea to download Bash Potter and actually learn to set it up yourself, because this is going to give you you'll learn how to set up a cron job, and this is something that setting up a cron job in your cron tab, it's really helpful, and you'll find it helpful in the future. And then it will also give you a little bit of an insight into Linux bash scripting. Okay, next thing, my Linux conversion count is now 2. This week, I have officially converted 2 Windows users over to the Linux operating system. My first people ever. The first one was a lady who works with my stepdad. She had an old Windows 98 machine, and it's basically ridden down with viruses and spyware, and she couldn't use it, but she just wants the internet. So I said, look, would you like something that's fast, stable, is going to do what your job, and it's not going to get viruses or spyware? And she was like, yeah, what is it? And so I put Linux on there, put Linux Mandrake 10, to be precise. I also charged $80 and got my $80 for doing it, which was cool. So I made a bit of cash, and she's got a fast system now. Runs nice and quick. It's got her internet set up on there, and I put Firefox on there for her. Firefox and Thunderbird is her email client. Set up her email. She's got a nice little KDE desktop with the Linux the Tux Win wallpaper, which is like the Windows XP wallpaper, but it's got a little Tux in the bottom right with an evil grin, and he's holding a bug squatter to swat the MSN butterfly, which I think's really cool. And she loves it. She thinks it's great, and she's raving about it now, and she doesn't even see much of a difference between that and Windows. And it's pleasing, you know, it's pleasing to see that people are not just... She was a little bit worried at first, but now I've told her how to do a few things, and, you know, she needs to write some emails with OpenOffice, and I set up a printer for her, which Mandrake automatically detected, so I really didn't have to do anything. That's really cool. The second person was my girlfriend's mum. She was very skeptical of Linux. But the difference between her and the first person I converted was her computer is brand new. It's a brand new, I think it's a AMD Athlon, about a 2.8 gigahertz or something, or 3, and it's got 512 RAM, so it's quite a quick little machine. And I've put, same thing, put Mandrake 10 on there, Firefox. She wanted a program to download MP3 so she could stick it to the RIAA, so I went ahead and whacked GTK Nutella on there for her, and she loves it. She's really happy with it. She's always been a Windows user, never used anything else, but like a lot of people I find, they only want to set up their email and do a few little things like that, and she's more than happy to do that. So, yeah, that's cool. And last thing, I'm just going to cut it short. Cut a little bit of news. Linux now controls the 2 top spots in the world for supercomputing. The former machine was a NEC-built computer called the Earth Simulator, and that had been at the top of the list for the last 2 years. The Earth Simulator ran at 35.86 teraflops a second, which is pretty damn quick. But the number one computer is a Linux cluster, which was built by IBM. So IBM have the top spot now. It's called the Blue Gene L, and that runs at 70.72 teraflops a second. The second one, I forgot what it was on the list, but that runs Linux as well. So the first 2 spots, Linux. Go Linux. So there you have it. The fastest computer in the world runs Linux. And so I guess that's it from me. Back to the tech show. See ya.
Thank you again. That was Brock Wolf on location from Perth, Australia. And next we have our musical intermission, I would guess. Alan did some research on this one today. You know what?
In our 35 seconds.
Yeah, well, your 35 seconds was way more productive than my previous 2 hours, though, because I went looking for something to play tonight. I didn't want to play, even though I really dig Pam York's jazz, I didn't want to, like, overplay and play his, you know, Pam York stuff again this week. However, I had, you know, I had decided to do so after I spent 2 hours on archive.org listening to some of the worst shit that I've ever heard in my life. But Alan saved the day, and he went and found us this next song, which is Headphones by a group called Fluid. Or is it Fluid by a group called... It's Headphones by a group called Fluid, who was it?
Tuneful Retro Pop Rock. We got this off of Magnitude.
Right, off of Magnitude.
It's got some really interesting stuff on there.
Which I'm still assuming is cool to play for podcast interviews and stuff like that. So, anyway, check this right out. They're pretty good. Again, this is Headphones by Fluid.
You slip your headphones on. I'll be your radio. And if you turn me on, how would you ever know? She got a level of to keep her company, but I can't be with her. She can't play with me. She got a 45. She got electric boots. Her frappin' comes alive. I'll be your grateful dad. I'll be your Ziggy too. And then we'll take a walk. The dark side of the moon. Glow.
Michelle, and I listen to the Linux Link Tech Show because they make me.
You're damn right we make her because she's married to me. So
I need to make some corrections.
Make some corrections.
And make some corrections about VNC.
Make some corrections, okay.
Here's the problem I ran into. Being a typical Slackware user, I did not go for the binary package. I went for the source. And that's what I used to do in the past is compile VNC myself. And not realizing that. And when you do that, you got to go through all those funky steps to get the XVNC.
However, if you get the binary package, you do have
the binary package in it. But the binary package, you got to like manually install it yourself, which is not a problem.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like an install script that I'm probably wrong on that, too.
No, the binary package, when I download it, I keep it in like my home directory off of directory.
That's the problem. I didn't run the VNC install script. But, yeah, so I was wrong on that. But there are three ways that you could do VNC for running it in Unix to get a VNC server, actually. If you want native X display, that would mean you could actually, instead of having a separate VNC server running, X server running, you can export your native .0 display. And that is either, if you're running X-Free 86 version 4X, but I don't know anybody that is anymore.
You said you can do this with the binary?
With the binary. Yeah, with the
export binary. Export your colon zero
right.
Display.
Right. Listen, this is three ways they say you can do this. If you're running X-Free 86 version 4, which I take it is different than X-Org.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Because even though they're kind of similar, and maybe there's some difference, there is a module that you can plug in, a loadable module, load VNC module, that's included. And then that would allow you to export your main display.
Cool.
Yeah, how about that? The second way is for other X servers, which I would take to be Xorg. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe Xorg will be able to use a VNC module, too, is to build a replacement for the native X server binary, which is VNC enabled. Now, that's some of the stuff I read before. There's a big pain in the ass to rebuild your X. It's not a fun thing. If you ever built X from the sources.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah. Back in the Red Hat 5.2 days. It hasn't been any time recent when it has been so big. But
you know, that's a little. Now, of course, if you're a Gentoo user.
I just did a Gentoo install not too long ago, and I was trying to build X. So
if you're not doing.
Start it up Friday night and come back Sunday. It might be done.
Oh, no, man. Start it up Monday and come back Sunday.
Or the third way, which is inefficient but non-invasive, is there's a VNC server called X0 VNC server, which constantly pulls any X display, allowing it to be controlled via VNC, which you can run in conjunction with your X server. But I would think that would be resource intensive.
You would think so, yeah.
Yeah. So now I just ran a VNC session between my two machines over here, not a problem. Maybe there was a problem with the stream when I did that, but not a problem at all for me. So that's a correction, and that's the way it is.
See, look how good we are. I mean, we have actual technical corrections within the same webcast.
We as professionals.
Yeah. But you just have to, you know, endure me babbling at the mouth because Alan has nothing to say, and Dan's over there screwing around with VNC, that's all. Oh, man.
Dan, without me for dinner.
Dan just heavied the atmosphere in here. So, with that, I'm going to hold my breath and hand the mic over to Pat, who actually came here to talk about his stuff.
You don't have to actually hand the mic to him because he has more
Linux content. You guys wanted more Linux? We got it.
Yeah, yeah.
MIT-TV.
Your MIT-TV stuff.
Is a personal video recorder software. We talked about it last time I was on.
Mm-hmm.
And you can record shows, schedule shows, and do all sorts of neat things. Some of the extra things that I didn't talk about last time that you guys kind of writing me on about, for instance, MythWeb, which is if you have Apache running, you can access your MythTV box remotely. And it works very well. I did it, you know, from work. I was able to log into my machine from work and see my programmings that I recorded. Not watch them, but just see what I had.
You can just, like, adjust your recording
exactly.
schedule.
Exactly. You can go
and
through
stuff,
your schedule
right?
and set up new shows to record. You can delete old programs. You can see the status of the back end running to see if there's any issues, And that thing worked pretty well.
Now, will this give you some kind of indication if you schedule, like, a conflict?
Yes, it will. Schedule conflict? It will give you an alert and let you know if you have a scheduling conflict. And you can decide which show you want to keep and which one you want to get rid of.
Nifty.
One of the other things that I was doing was the game emulators. They have X-Mame and also Super Nintendo emulation.
But, of course, you only used your legally owned ROMs, right?
Of course.
The ones that you have.
And that works real nicely. You know, okay. Like some of the old Nintendo games work pretty cool in the old Atari, old school Atari games. That worked real well. I was able to rip a DVD quite nicely.
Only for backup purposes.
Of course, and for viewing. Unfortunately, I don't have something, an application to do, like, for instance, the equivalent of DVD shrink, which for those of you who don't know what it is, it's a Windows application where you can rip a DVD and then re-encode it to fit on the single-layer DVD. So I'm looking right now to see if I can find an equivalent on Linux that'll do the same thing, so that I can fit my ripped DVD onto a single-layer DVD.
Now, when you rip the DVD, what does it do? It rips it off to an MPEG file or something?
No, it's an MPEG. It's an MPEG.
Is it still MPEG 2?
MPEG 2, yeah. It keeps the whole thing same size and everything.
Well, then why couldn't you just fit it back on a DVD again?
Because most DVDs are single layer. They only hold about 4 gig of data.
Right.
They now have dual layer burners, but the media is quite expensive. If you want to get a dual layer DVD, it'll cost you roughly $15 to $20 from depending on when you get it. So if I'm going to spend $15 to $20, I might as well just buy the DVD from the store.
Well, pretty much, yeah.
So, you know, DVD shrink is the application where you can
Or you could, of course, use AVI split and hack it up and put it on VCDs, right?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to do was, for shows that I recorded, I wanted to edit out the commercials and then burn them to DVD.
Right.
So, actually, I was listening to some of the old shows. One of the first applications that Dan was talking about was Avid Demux, and I found Avid Demux 2, which is the newer version of it.
Mm-hmm.
I downloaded that, installed it, and it worked quite nicely. You could get rid of your commercials, edit them out, and you can either save them, keep it as an MPEG 2 file without re-encoding, or you could save the raw video and the raw audio and re-encoding.
You don't have any problems when you're using that, like getting your audio out of sync or anything?
Well, let me explain. when I ripped it as what they call it as DVD PS, which is you don't re-encode it,
right.
It worked fine. The audio was nice and sync. I had the commercials gone. I tried doing it the other way, where I ripped it as a raw video and then raw audio and then re-encoding. I have a VIA chipset. Okay,
right.
There are issues with video editing and with VIA chipsets because they're basically a piece of shit. So when I tried doing that, I started getting the issues where the audio was starting to go out of sync the more further back in the stream I was. So I scrapped that and decided just to go with the DVD PS format, and that worked fine. I was able to create a DVD using DVD Author. And then I burned it using the DVD writing tools, and I got a DVD of a show I recorded, and it plays in my DVD player. It was pretty good.
Awesome.
Yeah, very awesome. And Avid Demux is pretty good. It's coming along. You know, I know the earlier versions people were complaining about it, but it let me do what I needed to do: get rid of the commercials and keep my show intact and.
But that doesn't Myth TV do is supposed to have some kind of utility that does that anyway, doesn't it?
Well, actually,
pull the commercials out.
Well, there is a skip function which works quite nicely. You can, when you're playing back to shows, it automatically detects where the commercials are and it will skip forward to next, when the show comes back, and that
works
well.
But it won't just like not record it, right?
Right. You still record the commercials, but on playback you can set it to skip them.
It's like the hidden 30-second skip function in TiVo.
Yeah, you can bring that back, by the way. Anyway, some of the other functions that I tried. Let me see. The Myth Weather, that works fine. That's pretty nice. You set your city, and you can go and you get your forecast in real time and see. I guess it's a feed from the Weather Channel's website in real time. One of the other things is you can rip audio CDs and any codec they have installed, MP3, FLAC, OGG, and play it back. That works nice. Myth Galleries is the other extension. If you have pictures, you can go in and set up different albums to view, and that works real nicely.
A little slideshow kind of thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. One of the functions that I really want to do, but I can't do because I only have one computer, is I want to have someone come over with, say, a laptop with Myth installed with just the front end and use my machine as the back end so that you're able to view my shows, you know, over the network.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I really want to try next, you know, try over, you know, wire network and also wirelessly, too. That would be something to try, too. Now, there is an extension. Actually, it's a bunch of scripts that some guy wrote where it has the burning software and all that, a bunch of scripts to burn everything and edit and create the DVDs. I installed it, but that's the next thing I'm going to try. So,
awesome. And now, is this like... I think when you were here last time, you were talking about how this you had this built on, what, a separate hard drive or a separate partition or
right.
something? Did you build your whole... Did I remember that correctly, that you actually built a whole system for this? Now it's dedicated?
No, I didn't, actually. I used my one computer to do it.
Okay, so it's still...
I just got an extra hard drive, cool. And I'm using my encoding card. But what I really wanted to do is, you know, I think I want to build a dedicated myth box. You know, I've been researching the parts. It's gonna run me about $350 using my existing hard drive
right.
and my encoder card. So I think that's what I wanted to do. I want to get a mini ATX case and a motherboard. And maybe an AMD 1.7, you know, processor, and do a dedicated myth box. I want to give it a whirl. I'm going to try it.
That's pretty cool.
So I'm going to document it and probably do a presentation at the LUG meeting.
Now, I know a lot of people have talked about doing it. You know, the dedicated myth box or Freevo is another one that you can do with Linux. And you know, the price point seems to be around $300 or $400, depending on, you know, whether you have any hardware laying around,
right.
kind of thing. And here's the thing with that: a lot of people want to know, like, is it really worth spending that kind of money?
Well,
you know, man, $300 or $400. Shit, you can buy a VCR for $50, $30.
Yeah, well, your VCR, right? You can't play old games. You know, you
right.
can't, you can't do your gallery. You can't do your web page viewing. You can't do remote access.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talk to Alan here. You're a TiVo owner, right, Alan?
Yeah.
I mean, right now I think the TiVos are going for about $100 with rebates. And
yeah,
for,
something like that.
For a lifetime subscription, it's going to run you $300. So you're spending $400 right there. Mm-hmm. So if you're someone who likes to tinker, you're into Linux, this is definitely something to try. You get everything that the TiVo does, recording and playing back shows, but you get the other things too, such as the music playing, the games... remote access.
So what you're really building here is an entertainment center.
Exactly, a home media center.
Right, a whole...
And you don't have the silly, you know, restrictions that you would have with a Windows system.
Right. See, I mean, I just had to play devil's advocate there because, you know, everybody knows that I also do that sort of thing myself, but I, you know, I use some homegrown scripts to do that kind of stuff. I haven't actually... Because I don't have another system yet that I can... Pissed with this setup, a whole Myth TV. But otherwise, I probably would.
It's a little hassle to set up. Like, I was talking to Dave Ashmore from the LUG.
Mm-hmm.
He tried getting it set up on his Mandrake system, and, you know, I'm not a Mandrake user. I really couldn't guide him. So he went and installed the Fedora 2, which I did, and we were able to get the driver working. He was able to record from the encoder card, but he was missing something on his setup. He was very close, but he gave up. So it's a little bit of a hassle to get going. But once you get it going, it's a very sweet application. It's very functional. It has a lot of extensions built that you can use, and it's awesome. It really is awesome.
That's good. I really would like to. I gotta play with that.
If you guys want to come over and, you know, bring your laptop over, install, and you could, you know, run my system as the back end and see what I got recorded.
And just, you know,
try it. You know,
hang out on your network and watch your videos.
Exactly. You know, just give it a shot. You know, if anyone
just make sure you it. You know, you make sure you hide all.
What are the minimum requirements for
personal
that?
Personal videos.
They say one gig.
1 gig processor.
Yeah, but I got an 800 megahertz and it runs fine. You know, I'm using the Hopog card, which does the encoding in real time.
Right.
So it's not really,
see, now that's probably why.
That's what saves it exactly. If you had a cheaper card,
that's saving your butt right there.
The CPU would be doing all your encoding and your system would come to a crawl, but the card is doing all the heavy duty, you know, processing.
Yeah. Why did I get some idea that you? What's the laptop involved in this?
I got rid of my laptop. I used to have a...
That's just the front end he's talking about.
Just using it for the front end.
Right. You can have multiple systems running. You only need one system that has the encoder card set up.
Right.
With the video feeding into it. That's where all your recordings are done. That's where your database for your programming resides.
And you said you connected this to your TV? Yet?
Actually, no.
No. So you'd need a video out.
Well, the encoder card has a video out built into it. Yeah.
Well, how would you do that, though? How would you video out through the encoder card after you recorded something?
You can run everything out of the from the computer through the video out, the TV out. You would have to set your resolution at 800, 600. And it, there's a bunch of settings that you got to do in the drivers where you tell it, you know, pipe all the video and audio out to the TV out connection.
Or you can just watch the videos and the movies and crap on your...
That's what I do.
On your front end, right? On your laptop or your...
It's in my spare bedroom, you know. You know, sometimes I go in and work out, you know.
With the MAME, do they give you any ROMs?
No, you got to do that
on your own. I kind of figured. I wondered about that, whether they
include the same thing with the Super Nintendo, too.
Yeah, you obviously you only took the ROMs.
Of course. I mean, who doesn't own a Super Nintendo system?
Purchased, right? Because you wouldn't be involved in any of that nefarious activity.
Absolutely not.
Can I make another correction?
Go ahead.
An apology. Stand corrected. It does work.
Apologize for laying that gas out a couple of minutes ago, too.
No,
man.
I'm not going to apologize for that.
That's what you need to apologize for.
Yes, on Xorg, you can put in the VNC module. And you can see right there, I have it running right now.
That's like nifty or something almost.
So that's great. Just like on any other system. You can control the main desktop now.
Cool.
It's great. It works great. Look how beautiful that is.
Yeah.
Now,
excellent.
We're probably hearing a lot of blips and dips and everything on the audio, but that's pretty cool, I think.
But here in the room, it looks all right.
So now I can go right ahead and install the latest version of Firefox from my laptop right here. And I would love to install the latest version on Crux, but they don't have the PPC version available yet.
And, of course, you haven't tried to compile. But, second we leave, man, he'll be on click, 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 click.
Have you ever tried to compile Firefox or Mozilla?
I have done a complete compile of Mozilla a couple times, yes.
That takes a long time.
And even on a fast machine, that can take several hours, so.
Yeah, so.
Not to mention hogging every inkling of, resource capacity that you have.
Link, what's the problem? You don't want to spend 3 days compiling? I mean, come on.
No.
You don't have a life.
No, I don't. That's the problem. See, now, if I had, like, some of these people, like, I'm going to pick on the Gen 2 users again, right? Okay, Gen 2 users. I like the distribution. It's pretty cool. It's easy to set up. But it's so busy, you know?
Very intensive.
It takes so long to do everything. And I'm thinking to myself, like, people who use this have got to either, one, don't need to use their computer, right? Or two, they're independently wealthy, and they have like multiple really fast computers so that they can, you know, do their daily computer stuff while they have their Gentoo machine happily compiling away for 4 days in the closet or something. But I can't afford to do that, man. I got one decently fast computer at home, and I need to use that for stuff that I need to use it for, and I can't afford to wait 3 days or over a weekend to get X installed so that I can, you know, check my blog line stuff or something like that, you know. But other than that, it's really cool. I just wish that, you know, I wish that instead of having like that stage 3 install thing,
right,
where they have most of the important stuff compiled, where
they
had
a stage 10 install.
Yeah, where they had a stage 10 install. It was like a Slack where every damn thing you want for the entire base system is done, and you just install it, and then if you wanted some extra stuff, you can put it on.
I had Gen 2 running for about a month. It took me about 2 weeks to get it, you know, tweaked the way I wanted it, and then I had the bright idea to do Emerge World, which is like, you know, this upgrade, and it completely hosed all my init scripts. And this is going back a couple of years.
Oh, that's another thing I forgot about, that init script crap that they pull on there.
I'm sure it's much better than one as 2 years
that's
ago.
That's a whole other tech show right there.
On
Gentoo, how they have that init thing where it pisses with your Etsy files and stuff like
that.
Oh, man,
and when you install something, you need to dig your init scripts are out, and you're like, what the hell? You got to go read the documentation of the package you just installed so you can know what to edit. And then, later on down the line, you're just like, run, screw it. And it's like, there's 36 errors in your Etsy directory.
Right.
These files are incompatible.
And everybody in the room except for Alan. Because you haven't done a Gentoo install yet.
No, I don't have any.
So all three of us have been in the same position. And what have all three of us done at that same position?
Get rid of it.
Install Slackware.
It's time to install Slackware. That's exactly right.
Crap.
Screw this. We'll install something else.
Yeah, it's great if you have a super fast machine and don't have a life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, it's 2204 time to go.
Time to get.
Well, I just did the, you know, my apology was to Patrick for dicking around with the XVNC stuff while he was talking.
Well, I was paying attention. It was a wonderful, you know,
discussion regarding Myth TV.
He understands. You listen to the podcast tomorrow, right? Or no, next month.
Yeah,
when he catches up.
Yeah, when I still have to listen to, like, the last tech show, the last rant. I told Alan I'd listen to it because he said there were some audio issues with it.
Oh, man.
It sounded like you were, like, I don't know if it was, like, my machine was doing stuff while it was
I don't
playing.
Remember him having a problem with it.
I know there was a first show had... First
yeah, the
show.
First show was terrible.
Yeah. It was bad.
But the odd thing was I didn't have a problem listening to it on an iPod. Can't look at that. It's a complete silence now. Everybody looking at me like,
I didn't listen to it on an iPod.
So what's the deal with an iPod? Apple owns the content that's on the iPod?
What? They do?
I posted an article on the mailing list like a week ago about this. People packing the iPod, you know, to get around stupid things that are on the firmware upgrades where they break functionality.
I didn't hear, but I have to look
at that. Oh, that was that downloader thing.
Right.
They broke, yeah. Yeah, they don't particularly make it easy to get it. If you're using the software, I don't think it's particularly easy to get your songs back off the iPod. But
oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
That's why you run it under Linux, and you can.
Well, you can do it through if you mount your iPod as a hard drive too. You can go in through
copy your stuff
and
off,
copy it off.
Copy the music.
Yeah,
directory.
They don't make it easy to get the stuff
yeah,
back
each
off.
Each song
of there.
Is a directory, though. You gotta go putting everything back 32? Together again.
Huh?
It's FAT 32.
No, it's.
Well, it depends if you have the Mac version. It's
HFS,
Mac, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess with Windows, maybe it is. Yeah, it has to be FAT 30. I don't think Windows has HFS support.
No.
Windows have support for shit.
They have support for millions and millions of computer viruses, though.
You know, and speaking of OS X, I was thinking today, it's great, but you know what sucks in OS X is scanner support. Now, maybe somebody has a wonderful scanner out there that works great, and I'm not saying the scanners don't work. The problem is there really isn't any applications that you can, you know, a general user can get that take advantage of it. No.
Free applications, you mean? See, because this is what I see the problem with OS X.
Right, the free applications.
You know,
like if I wanted
to
just
death.
Four free applications, and then they want to take shit that we've all been using for 100 years on Unix, like Pine, and charge you $50 bucks for it, right? No,
well, no,
that's the Apple way.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know what? You can use GIMP. I use GIMP on OS X all the time.
Right.
So if I want to scan an image in, and I could, that's easy to do.
Uh-huh.
And I can manipulate the image with GIMP. The problem is, in order to have GIMP on OS X, you have to have the X server.
Right.
And to have the X server, you have to load the developer tools, which aren't installed by default. Okay, which isn't that bad, but for, like, Joe Schmo off the street, he's not going to know that.
No clue. Yeah.
And right, they have all the warnings that say, you know, with regards to Darwin and everything, they're like, this is for experienced users, stuff like that, not really intended for general Mac users, you know, be wary, you know, installing all this. So it's going to, right off the bat, throw people off. Now, we got this from Apple, these laptop labs at work.
Right.
And they call them a digital lab. And it came with, like, digital cameras, camcorders, and a scanner.
iPods.
And it was a Canon scanner. Yeah, iPods. And it was a Canon scanner, USB. And the software on there was for Windows or OS 9. Now, there was an OS X version of the general software that controls the scanner.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to actually do anything with the stuff you scanned, you'd have to run an application in classic mode or OS 9. Now, the new laptops that we got come without classic mode installed.
Awesome.
Yeah, so they don't have OS 9 on there. So the applications, you can't use them. And you can't run them. And furthermore, I don't want to run an OS 9 application in OS 10. That's why I have OS 10. I want the freaking editing software to be able to do it in OS 10. So I spent, like, hours trying to find stinking software to put on. And everything I found, you know, that was free,
right,
just wasn't going to cut. I mean, it limited the size of the file that you can actually edit.
Right.
Like, if they pulled in a file, or it did other sorts of limitations.
You're talking the free non-GNU tools, right?
Right. It was just kind of kludgy. And you know, it's like
same kind of stuff they did, you know, they used to do for, they probably still do it for Windows. You know, you look for freeware for Windows, and it's like, yo, you can run this, but
everything
you can
share.
Yeah, you can only run it for a month, and you can only make, you know, half of a.
You can use a program, but you can't save anything.
Right.
Dan, how's iMovie? Have you played with that at all?
Yes, I've done some work. iMovie's pretty easy to work with. Now, you know, like when you're trying to do video editing and stuff in Linux, to actually edit and then render something that's decent is a nightmare compared to iMovie. Because iMovie, you typically, you know, we got 8-year-olds using iMovie and putting stuff out that's, you know.
What does it encode to? Is it DivX?
Any QuickTime compatible format. So you have, yeah, that's the UPS going off again. It always goes off.
Now,
don't worry about it.
If you want to go to DVD, does it do MPEG too?
It's called replace the battery time.
I've never burned one to DVD. I think it does. You can do MPEG 4. You can do, I believe you can do DivX if you get the right plugins, and you can do quick AVI and QuickTime.
Because if MPEG 2 isn't supported, do you have to pay extra for that?
Probably. I'm not sure.
It wouldn't surprise
me. I'm not sure. I never really burned to a DVD yet. Right. Other people have. I'll have to find out for you.
Know.
But iMovie makes, and then there's what the other one is. Frame Maker. There's another.
They have a higher end video editing package.
Right, and that's I've seen that. And that
costs money. Like the low end version is like $300, and the full version is like I think $500.
Money.
It's Apple, hey.
But no, I was just saying. I wish there was like a native version of GIMP, and I wish there was a native version of OpenOffice already. But that's still another year off, I think. But did we say the new version of OpenOffice was out 2 weeks ago?
I don't think so, no.
2.0.
Yeah.
It is, though. And
no, not 2.0. 2.0
no,
release candidates
coming, yeah.
Are out.
Okay.
But 1.1.3, I think it is, has been out for a couple weeks now. And so update. And thank you for listening, everybody.
Yeah, that's
yes,
right.
Thank you.
Once again, we're running way out of time. But, you know, that's just more stuff that we can. I'm telling you, we could do, you know, 2 or 3 hour tech show.
And Pat, hope you come back again soon.
I'll bring
yeah,
more
man,
beer.
Thanks for coming.
Bring more beer.
All right, everybody. Good night. Thank you for listening to Tech Show episode 58 here on November 10th, right? November 10th? November 10th, 2004. Thank you very much, and catch you again next week. This is Link.
This is Alan.
Dan.
And Pat.
Goodbye.
Night.
The Linux Link Tech Show.